This message is a presentation of Pinnacle Baptist Church and the preaching ministry of Pastor Ray McBerry. Other messages like this are available online at pinnaclebaptist.com. The church is located at 2517 High Falls Road in Griffin, Georgia. If you're in the area, we would love for you to visit us this Sunday. Now, here's today's message.
Well, tonight we are in Genesis chapter number 50. And so we have come a long way since we began our study in the book of Genesis over a year ago. It has taken us a number of weeks to get through the book because there are some weeks we took a little longer to get through a chapter than just 1 week when we were starting out anyway. And then we've had some weeks along the way where we've had some singings and we've had some other special Sundays along the way. But it's been over a year since we began our study in the book of Genesis. And I have taught through the book of Genesis, I believe, 4 or 5 times in my ministry over the years. And it seems like no matter how many times I've been through the book of Genesis, either as a student or teaching through it, I always learn something new as I go through the book. And I can think of a number of things that I feel like I know better or know brand new just from having gone through the book of Genesis this time. So I hope that you feel the same way. I hope that you feel like you are more personally acquainted with the book of Genesis after us going through it this time than you ever have been before. No matter how many times you've been through it before, I trust that you learned some new things along the way, saw some things that maybe you had forgotten about over the time, and hopefully you feel like you know the book of Genesis on a personal level now. So that brings us to the end of the book, and in Genesis chapter 50, it ends in a very appropriate way, I believe. And so let's dig in and see what's here. Chapter 50, beginning in verse 1, it says, "And Joseph fell upon his father's face, and wept upon him, and kissed him. And Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father, and the physicians embalmed Israel." So Jacob has died. He's passed away. Does anybody remember from several weeks ago, what was the age of Jacob when he died? Anybody remember? He was a ripe old age of 147 years old. And so that's not as old as his daddy when he died, Isaac. Not as old as his grandfather, Abraham, when he died. But it was still a good old age. I believe Abraham was 170, Isaac was 180, and Jacob lives to be 147 years old. It's kind of fitting what we're going to see here about the burial of Jacob and the very kingly burial that he receives, given the fact that not only is he the father of Israel, that is of the 12 tribes of Israel, but also because half the book of Genesis is about the life and family of Jacob. And so really the whole second half of the book of Genesis is about Jacob, whose name was changed to Israel. So we see here he has passed away. Joseph kisses him, and Joseph commanded his servants to embalm his father. Now Joseph's servants were the best in the world at embalming, folks. You already know this because Joseph is the number two man where? In Egypt. I mean, that's the land of the mummies and the pyramids. So Joseph had the people working for him that were the best in the world at embalming, folks. We know that because there are mummies that have were embalmed by those ancient Egyptians that are still around to this day because they had perfected what they did at embalming people. And so he has the Egyptians embalm his father. It says in verse 3, "And 40 days were fulfilled for him. So are fulfilled the days of those which are embalmed." So it took them a total process of 40 days to do the embalming. I suppose this is one of the ancient writings that tells us a little bit about the embalming process there in Egypt. I know there are some writings that they have since deciphered in hieroglyphics, but this tells us about the period of time it took for them to go through the embalming process, which was about 40 days. Aren't you glad it doesn't take 40 days now for us to go through the embalming process before we get to the burying part? That's right. Who could afford 40 days worth of folks working on the embalming process today? Certainly none of us would be able to, But Joseph could afford that. He's the number two man in Egypt. And his dad was treated as though he were a pharaoh in the way that he was embalmed and his body preserved. Look what it says at the end of verse 3. And the Egyptians mourned for him 70 days. So how many days in all were the Egyptians mourning for Jacob? 70 days. I did not know this until very recently when I was doing some studying for our final night here in the book of Genesis, but the normal amount of time that the Egyptian people mourned the passing of a pharaoh was 72 days. So the Egyptian people, not the children of Israel, but the Egyptians had so much love and respect for Joseph that when his father, Jacob, passed away, they gave him the same mourning they would give for a pharaoh minus 2 days. Now, obviously, Jacob had been there in the land of Egypt for about 17 years, so they knew who he was, they knew of him, but it was because of their love for Joseph. Joseph was the savior of their kingdom, their people as well. And so it was their love for Joseph that caused them to give his father a royal funeral and royal mourning for 70 days, 2 days shy of the mourning of a pharaoh. Verse 4, and when the days of his mourning were past, Joseph spake unto the house of Pharaoh, saying, if now I have found grace in your eyes, speak, I pray you, in the ears of Pharaoh, saying, my father made me swear, saying, lo, I die. In my grave which I have digged for me in the land of Canaan, there shalt thou bury me. Now therefore let me go up, I pray thee, and bury my father, and I will come again. So Joseph sends word to Pharaoh through someone in his household, asking Pharaoh to give him permission to take his father back to the land of Canaan to bury him. Now, we haven't talked very much about this, but at this particular point in Egyptian history, the land of Canaan, what we know as the land of Israel today, also called the Levant in ancient history, that region was somewhat under the control of the Egyptians at this point in time. Now, the Egyptians were not necessarily stationing armies there and controlling it in that regard full-time at this point in history, but they were seen as the overseers of the Levant, the land of Canaan. And so the Egyptian pharaoh, if he wants to, he can give permission for any of his people to go back to Canaan, and no one there in the land of Canaan is going to do very much to oppose whatever he wants done because the Egyptians control that region. So Joseph sends word to Pharaoh, my dad has asked that I bury him in the land of our fathers. Please ask Pharaoh to give me permission to take my dad home and bury him. So what does Pharaoh say? Verse 6, Pharaoh said, go up and bury thy father according as he had made thee swear. Now, where is it that Jacob wants to be buried in the land of Canaan? The cave of Machpelah, that's right. The cave of Machpelah on the plains of Mamre. It's near Hebron in the southern part of the land, the territory that later will belong to the tribe of Judah. And it is there in the cave Machpelah where Abraham was buried with Sarah, where Isaac and Rebekah were buried, and where Jacob, years before this, had buried one of his wives. Which wife had he buried in the cave Machpelah? No. That was a trick question. It was actually Leah. Now, Brother Lawrence, I would have guessed Rachel too, but the reality is it was Leah that was buried there in the cave of Machpelah. Rachel, you remember, had been buried near where she gave birth to Benjamin, which was a little village that is going to become very important later on in history. What was the place where she gave birth to Benjamin and was buried? Bethlehem Ephratah. That's exactly right, Joseph. The little village of Bethlehem that years, centuries later, becomes the birthplace of the Messiah. Well, you guessed correctly. And so you get the gold star for guessing, I guess. All right, here we go. Verse number 7, and Joseph went up to bury his father, and with him went up all the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his house, and all the elders of the land of Egypt, and all the house of Joseph. and his brethren and his father's house. Only their little ones and their flocks and their herds they left in the land of Goshen. So here is this huge entourage that leaves Egypt and makes its way north up to the land of Canaan. What's that? Yeah, this is definitely a huge procession. There are not only the whole family of Israel, that is all the 12 sons and their children, except for the littlest ones, but also the Egyptians. There's a good number of the dignitaries of Pharaoh's own household that go with Joseph and his brothers up to the land of Canaan. This was no small affair. This was a huge procession. By the way, you know, we still have great respect for funeral processions, at least here in the Bible Belt, too. I know anytime you see a funeral procession coming, I learned before I ever started driving myself, if you see a funeral procession coming, you're supposed to pull over on the side of the road, and most of the time you turn your lights on or do something as a show of respect for whoever that person is that's passed. It has nothing to do with whether you know them or not. Most of the time, we don't know who's in the funeral procession. It's just a matter of respect for the one who has passed. But I know years ago, before TR was ever born, this was probably about 25 years ago, I was working one summer in between years teaching, and I was near Notre Dame. Is that Illinois or Indiana? That's Indiana, I guess. I was up north in Yankee land, and I remember whatever little town I was going through, I saw a funeral procession coming. The lights were on, the hearse was in front, there was a police escort, and so I did what my mom and daddy taught me to do. Miss Virginia, I pulled over to the curb there. They had curbs that were pretty substantial, so I couldn't get off the road, but I pulled over as far as I could in this little town as the funeral procession was coming by, and the hearse got past me and the police car got past me, and I'm still sitting there waiting because there's a pretty long procession behind them, and so I'm waiting respectfully for all the cars to pass that have their lights on and the little flags like let people know that they're part of the funeral procession. Well, all of a sudden, that bunch of Yankees that were behind me started honking their horns, hollering obscenities out the window, making rude gestures. And I'm like, what's going on? Do they not see this is a funeral procession going on? And so the funeral procession went by. I just sat there blocking traffic until the funeral procession moved on. Then Brother John, I started off down the road. Well, whoever the fellow was behind me, that Yankee kept flashing his lights and honking his horn. So I pulled into the first parking lot that I could find. And this guy pulls up in a truck beside me and he says, "What are you doing blocking traffic?" I said, "Do you not see there was a funeral procession going by?" He said, "You're not from around here, are you?" I said, "No, I'm not. Where I'm from, we stop out of respect no matter who the person is that's in the funeral procession, whether we know them or not." He said, "Well, we don't do that up here." And so I guess down here in the Bible Belt, we just still do things a little differently. But I personally kind of like the way we do things. I don't intend to stop no matter how many of them move down here. I'm going to keep doing that anyway. But this was quite a grand funeral procession going all the way from Egypt up to the land of Canaan. A lot of people and some very well-to-do people at that. Verse 9 says, "And there went up with him both chariots and horsemen. And it was a very great company. And they came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond Jordan. And there they mourned with a great and very sore lamentation. And he made a mourning for his father 7 days. So this huge funeral procession arrives in the land of Canaan. And there they stop and mourn for Jacob in the land of Canaan for 7 more days. Now, they've already mourned for him 70 days after he was embalmed. But now here they are, they're mourning for him 7 days in the land of Canaan before they're going to bury him. You reckon that would have gotten the attention of the locals? Yeah, all this huge crowd of people that are very wealthy, very influential, very powerful. They got horses and chariots. There's a huge company of them. And now they're mourning for whoever this is that has died 7 days. Verse 11, and when the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites, saw the mourning in the floor of Atad, they said, this is a grievous mourning to the Egyptians. Wherefore the name of it was called Abel Mizraim, which is beyond Jordan. Now, Mizraim, as you might remember from the beginning of our study in the book of Genesis, is the most ancient name for Egypt, Mizraim. That was one of the sons of Ham, from whom the Egyptians are descended. The word Abel means mourning, as in M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. So the Canaanite name for this place from this point on became the field of mourning of the Egyptians. The Egyptian field of mourning is what they renamed this place because it was such a notable event that occurred there locally. And his sons did unto him according as he had commanded them, that is the sons of Jacob. For his sons carried him into the land of Canaan and buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah, which Abraham bought with the field for a possession of a burying place of Ephron the Hittite before Mamre. So somebody remind us, what does the name Machpelah mean? Double cave. That's right. It was a double cave. We don't know if it had two branches, one above and one below, or one to the left and one to the right, but apparently this was the perfect place for burying. It was being used as a catacomb of sorts to bury multiple people. We already know Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebekah, and Leah have been buried there. And so now Jacob is going to be buried there right alongside of Leah. Verse 14, and Joseph returned into Egypt, he and his brethren, and all that went up with him to bury his father after he had buried his father. So they all returned back to the land of Egypt. Now, they've just buried Jacob. How do you reckon Joseph's brothers are feeling about right now? I think maybe so. Yep, we're about to see that. They're a little unnerved because, sure, Joseph has been kind to them for the last 17 years, but that's because Daddy was still alive. Joseph didn't want to do anything to upset their father, but the brothers are thinking to themselves now, well, since Daddy is dead, what's Joseph going to do to us now? Whatever his true intentions were are about to be revealed, and we're about to see what his true intentions are. Verse number 15, and when Joseph's brethren saw that their father was dead, they said, Joseph will peradventure hate us and will certainly requite us all the evil which we did unto him. They said, it's about the chickens are about to come home to roost now that Daddy's gone. And they sent a messenger unto Joseph, saying, thy father did command before he died, saying, so shall ye say unto Joseph, forgive, I pray thee now, the trespass of thy brethren and their sin. For they did unto thee evil, and now we pray thee, forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of thy father. They said, listen, Daddy said before he died that when he died, we were to let you know that he said, please forgive us. Now, did he really tell them to ask Joseph that? We don't know. The Bible didn't record that previously before he died, but that's what they said that he told them to say. So this would lead us to believe that at some point, Jacob knew the whole story of what had happened years before, although he probably didn't know it in the very beginning when he got down to Egypt. At some point along the way, he learned the truth of what had happened. At least that's what we're led to believe by the brothers. So they say to Joseph, they send word to Joseph, Daddy said, forgive us. Please forgive us. They're in a very contrite mode at this point. They're not in the same spirit that they were all those years before when they grabbed him and threw him down in the well and then sold him as a slave. Look what Joseph's response is. Joseph wept when they spake unto him. And his brethren also went and fell down before his face, and they said, behold, we be thy servants. Boy, things have come full circle, haven't they, since the early years of the life of Joseph, when we saw Joseph that had those two dreams about his brothers bowing down before him. The dream has absolutely been fulfilled, and here they are even at the end of the book, doing the same thing they did when they first realized who he was there in Egypt. They are bowing down before him just as the prophecy had said would happen all those years before. By the way, did they try to thwart that quote-unquote prophecy as they viewed it all those years before? They tried to alter it, to change it, to make it not come to effect. They didn't believe it was real anyway. But we see here that in spite of the attempts by man to alter God's plan, God's will is still fulfilled. God's plan went forward and was fulfilled despite the plans of men. And can I just remind us, when things look really bad around us today, God has a plan, and it's right on track. Let's not be discouraged. Let's not be anxious when we see these horrible things changing in our society around us, because God is still on the throne. Joseph, God has a plan that he's working out in our midst for our good and his glory. And let's not think that the Bill Gates of the world or the Joe Bidens or the George Bushes or anybody else are going to thwart the plan of God. It's going to be accomplished. So just rest in that. Verse number 19, and Joseph said unto them, fear not, for am I in the place of God? Now, Joseph was actually in a place where he could have acted like God to some degree, but instead, he has a different spirit. He says, why should you fear me? Am I God? Am I in God's place? Now, maybe that was also Joseph's way of saying, listen, I'm just leaving this up to the Lord to take care of what was done that was wrong. I'm not in God's place to judge this. I'm going to let God take care of it. And that's what he says here in verse 19. Verse 20, but as for you, ye thought evil against me. But God meant it unto good, to bring to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive. Who could have ever thought, back when all that happened, that it was going to turn into something good? I know Joseph couldn't have seen that from his vantage point, looking up out of the well as he was being pulled up out of there and sold as a slave. I would imagine Reuben didn't see this turning into anything good. He had tried to talk the brothers out of this. I'm sure none of them saw anything good coming of what they did. But God used it for his good. And whatever you're going through or about to go through or going to go through, God's going to use it for your good and his glory if you continue to trust in him, just like he did with Joseph. Verse number 21, now therefore fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. So there was no ill feelings between Joseph and his brethren. And Joseph dwelt in Egypt, he and his father's house, and Joseph lived 110 years. So he didn't live as old as Jacob did, but he still lived to a ripe old age of 110. I don't know about you, but I don't think my knees are going to last till I get to 110. Brother John says he doesn't think his are either. But 110, that might not be 147 or 170 or 180, but that's still quite a few years. God gave him 110 years. And Joseph saw Ephraim's children of the third generation. The children also of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were brought up upon Joseph's knees. So he saw his own children, he saw his grandchildren, and he even saw his great-grandchildren. He saw them to the third generation before he passed. And Joseph said unto his brethren, I die, and God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land unto the land which he sware to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Now, do you suppose any of his 11 brothers were still alive when he died at the age of 110? I don't know. Maybe some of them were. Maybe Benjamin was. We don't know. Some of the others could have been. But I suspect it's at least possible that all of his actual brethren were already passed away. And these are their children and their grandchildren that he's talking to. These are the second and third generation of the Israelites that have been born and lived and grown up in the land of Egypt. But they love and respect Joseph because they knew the story of how he had saved their family just like he had been used to save all of Egypt. Miss Mary?
Which one was the youngest one of all the brethren?
Benjamin would have been the youngest, yes, ma'am. So he was younger than Joseph, so maybe he was still alive. We don't know, but for Joseph to have lived to be 110, it's possible he may have outlived all of them. We don't know in this particular point here. Verse 25, and Joseph took an oath of the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and ye shall carry up my bones from hence. So Joseph made the rest of the children of Israel that were still alive, he made them make a promise, an oath. What was the oath he made them take that day before he died? That they would do what? That's right. That they would take his bones back to the land of their fathers and bury him in the land of Canaan, just like the rest of their fathers had been buried. In other words, he wanted to be buried in the land of promise that God promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. The story of the book of Genesis ends in a coffin in Egypt. He's embalmed like a mummy. He's put into a coffin, but the children of Israel kept that coffin until they were ready. When we see the children of Israel 400 some odd years later coming out of the promised land, making their way to the land of Canaan, one of the things they will be carrying with them out of Egypt is a coffin carrying the bones and the mummified body of Joseph from all those years before. It's kind of interesting that Joseph, as the number two man in Egypt, he really could have been treated like a pharaoh in his own burial there in Egypt. They could or would have built some size of a pyramid or some burial structure for him. He was the number two man in all of Egypt. He was the national hero of Egypt because of saving them through the 7 years of famine. He could have been buried like a pharaoh. But he chose, rather than being memorialized and buried like a pharaoh, he chose for his body to be put in a coffin and taken back and buried in the land of his fathers. I think about that and what that means in the spiritual sense in my life and your life. You know, the world has a lot to offer in life and in death, but none of it is sweeter than knowing that we're doing the will of God. And that when we are drawing our last breath, and this body has the breath leave it, to know that those that come behind us know that we had a testimony that we loved God and lived for Him. Boy, what a greater memorialization that is than being buried in a pyramid. And that was the testimony of Joseph. We've seen Joseph and we've seen his father, Jacob, both go through some life lessons over this last part of the book of Genesis. Jacob, as I said, the entire second half of the book of Genesis is about his life and his family. I think we see that at the end of Jacob's life, he was a much different person than he was years earlier when we saw him trying to outwit and outsmart his brother Esau and steal the birthright, or steal the blessing, rather. And so we see Jacob was a mature, godly man. If he had been in his fleshly days like he was younger, he probably would have asked them to take him back and bury him right along beside Rachel. But instead, he asked that they bury him with his father, Abraham and Isaac, beside his wife Leah instead of his favorite wife Rachel. Joseph, he has certainly matured and grown in the Lord. Not to say that he wasn't spiritual in his early days, but he's come to the end of his life now, and he has a testimony for God even in death. Oh, that you and I would have the same kind of testimony when we draw our last breath as well. Well, that brings us to the end of the book of Genesis. We've seen a lot, read a lot, hopefully learned a lot. Anybody have any questions or comments about anything in tonight's study or to do with the book of Genesis in general?